Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
What if it's not a devil, but an angel in the details? What if the whole healthcare debate gets easier when we get more information and stop simplifying?
Tell me more. More and then some.
When they get into asking people about specific provisions, many polls show that people accept these provisions and want them and support them.
So give me all the dirty details, every little clause, every tax incentive, every factoid about pre-existing conditions.
I want some more and then some.
The more we know, the more we agree. Is it really that simple? It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, February 24th. Todd Zwillick is with me for one more day. I get to enjoy your company before you head back down to Washington. John returns tomorrow.
Thanks, Celeste. Well, let's get right to some of the top stories we're following this morning, staying with the healthcare debate, where an idea that seemed toxic only a few weeks ago is gaining new steam with Democrats. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he may use a parliamentary shortcut called reconciliation to bypass Republicans and pass part of the healthcare bill. Republicans are complaining because the move would allow Democrats to pass the bill with just 51 votes, but Harry Reid says,
realistically, they should stop crying about reconciliation as if it's never been done before. It's done almost every Congress.
Reid says reconciliation has been used 21 times since 1981, and mostly by Republicans.
But that's the tactics. What about the substance of the health care bill? We're joined now by Republican Congressman Michael Burgess. He serves the 26th District of Texas that covers the Fort Worth area, and he also practiced obstetrics and gynecology for more than 20 years. Congressman, tell me, what's the number one thing that you think Congress can actually do to improve the health care system?
But the best thing we could do to improve the healthcare system would be get out of the way. But it doesn't look like we're going to do that. We have to find a way to make the purchaser of healthcare, the patient, actually put the power back in their hands. And nothing we are doing in any of the bills that are before us really moves us in that direction. In fact, if anything, we make the problem a little bit worse with greater expansion of administrative pricing and greater distancing between the patient, the physician, and whoever's making the healthcare decisions.
Okay, Congressman Burgess, stay with us. We'll be back with you in a moment.
Staying on Capitol Hill now, Toyota's president, Akio Toyoda, has just arrived on Capitol Hill to testify at a House hearing on safety lapses and recalls at Toyota. Earlier on The Takeaway, we spoke to Bill Emmett, former editor at The Economist, who thinks Congress will go hard at Toyota's big boss.
They will appreciate that he's come all the way from Japan. However, this is a safety issue. It's an issue of populist politics as well.
Paul Eisenstein, the publisher of the DetroitBureau.com, was more explicit when he told us,
it won't be polite and it won't be easy. In fact, Mr. Toyota may again wonder why he did come to Washington.
Toyota's president is expected to apologize for the safety lapses.
Men's hockey is back today at the Winter Olympics. The United States is taking on Switzerland in men's hockey at 3 p.m. Eastern, then Russia and Canada in a big game face-off. That could be the gold medal game, not a quarterfinal. We're going to talk more with New York Times Olympics editor about that in just about 20 minutes. Looking at the markets, Asian markets are down. European indices are up. Futures are up as well. The Dow will start at 10,292. The S&P opens at 1,094 and the NASDAQ at 2213. Coming up, our series Frustration Nation continues. Being frustrated is one thing. A lot of you are frustrated, but do you have a solution? Some of our listeners have been giving us some answers to the gridlock, many of them using just six words, like Stephen in Fort Lauderdale, who says Democrats must call the Republicans bluff. Give us your fix at 8778-MYTAKE or post it to our site, thetakeaway.org.
And we're talking healthcare throughout the show. We go to listeners across the country to hear what they think about the debate. They're joining us later in this hour, and in just a few minutes, we talk with two congressmen who are also doctors and get their takes. That's coming up in just a few minutes.
Good morning. I am joined for one morning, at least, by Todd Zwillick, who's filling in for John Hockenberry. John comes back tomorrow. So tomorrow we're going to have a bipartisan healthcare summit in Washington. And everyone's watching to see if there's really going to be some bipartisanship going on. President Obama had this message for Republicans in a speech in Nevada last week.
Show me what you got. But don't let the American people go another year, another 10 years, another 20 years without health insurance reform in this country.
Joining us now are two lawmakers who also are doctors. Republican Congressman Michael Burgess serves the 26th District of Texas, including the Fort Worth area. He practiced obstetrics and gynecology for more than 20 years. And Congressman Jim McDermott is a Democratic representative from Washington, a trained psychiatrist, and the longest-serving physician in Congress. Later in the hour, Congressman, we're going to be talking to three folks from around the country who are listening in right now, and they're going to respond to what you both say. So be careful. Your constituents are listening. But first off, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Congressman, we all of us know that the Americans are extremely frustrated with the arguments and what they see as gridlock going on in Washington right now. So I want to make a deal with both of you. Let's talk about the health care bill, not just the bill, but health care reform in a positive way today. I want to completely leave behind any statements about things that we might oppose in the bill. We're going to make a deal that all we're going to talk about today are solutions that you support, okay?
Okay. Okay, let's go to solutions.
Okay, let's start with you, Congressman Burgess. Let's go to rate hikes first, because we've been hearing a lot about Anthem Blue Cross in California, which, in spite of record profits, is raising its premium rates by 39%. People across the country are complaining about the skyrocketing costs of their insurance premiums. How do we fix it?
You know, this is interesting because we've got this, we actually have them coming into our oversight hearing today. And what is unclear to me from the documents that have been provided to me beforehand, California, where this occurred, actually has a prohibition against raising rates unless you can confirm that with actuarial data. What we're going to be missing from this hearing is the Commissioner of Insurance from California, who I guess is running for other political office. Did they approve that or not is really becomes the central question. We already have a system to prevent that from happening. Do we need to create a new federal system? And if we do, why? And how could we make that better? I'm not convinced that's absolutely necessary, but at the same time, you're right, 40% is a scary number, and in some ways, you wonder if this happened completely by accident, that this rate hike came in right on the eve of this summit.
Congressman Burgess from Texas with possible conspiracy theories. Jim McDermott out of Washington, what do you think about rate hikes? How do we fix them?
Well, the rate hike issue was set in place in Medicare, certainly, and that is the population in which most of the health care dollars are spent. When we decided that we would pay usual and customary fees and we would get away from any kind of regulation. It was a mistake made in the 1965. And the only way really to get that is to get back to some kind of real regulation of rates, of costs of health care. And it's not easy to do. I've been doing this too long to think that you can have some magic answer here. But I do think that it is possible. Other countries, France, for instance, for half the money that we spend in the United States, uses regulation to control their health care costs. And it's possible to do, but you have to be vigorous. In this case, the Congress has been irregularly interested in doing this.
Not often interested. Okay, you guys have probably seen the poll results out showing that when Americans are asked about specific provisions in much of the health care reform, they actually support them by large numbers, and I mean 60% to 70%, talking about health insurance exchange, getting rid of restrictions on pre-existing conditions, closing that donut hole in Medicare that makes seniors responsible for paying for their own drugs for a period of time. But they are confused about the entire bill and react negatively. So tell me, Congressman Burgess, let's start with you. Of the provisions that most Americans support, which do you also support?
There are about 7 or 9 things that we could all agree on and do.
Okay, give me two or three of them.
The first thing that when I heard from my constituents over the summer at the town hall, we don't like what you're doing, but would you please do something about pre-existing conditions? And in fact, we do have things that there are bills out there already written that would help with this. Again, for whatever reason, we've decided not to go there. The proposal, and here's the tough part too, because all these great things that the president is talking about doing is we're not going to get any of those till 2014, 2015 under the best of circumstances. But we can start tomorrow on just essentially insurance reform to begin to get around the problem of pre-existing conditions. You do that by risk pools. You do that by reinsurance. 34 states already have programs set up. Perhaps we're not funding them appropriately. Maybe that is one direction we could go. Congressional Budget Office said it would take about $25 billion over 10 years to do this. That number may be a little bit light, but
this is progress, Congressman Burgess. Congressman McDermott, you just heard your colleague say that at least on pre-existing conditions, when you guys meet in the summit tomorrow, you can find some consensus on that.
Well, actually, we'll have a chance to do it before tomorrow. On the floor of the House today, Mike and I'll have an opportunity to vote on the repeal of the McCarran-Ferguson Act, which gave monopolistic power to the insurance companies in the sense of not being available to be regulated by federal law. We've given that to the states all these years, and the mess is created, and now we have an opportunity to change that today. So we'll see by 9 o'clock tonight whether or not the Republicans really are serious about changing the law that protects insurance companies. They say they are, and I hope they are.
That's Congressman Jim McDermott, a Democrat from Washington, and Congressman Michael Burgess, a Republican from Texas. They're both physicians. We're going to get some listener views who've been listening in just about less than an hour, but what's your take?
This is Vince from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. Regarding the so-called bipartisan summit, I think it looks a lot more like a show trial or a political stunt or a propaganda fest than any real substantive exchange. I think it's orchestrated by the administration to make some political points, and that's really about all it's for.
You can reach us at 8778-MY-TAKE or post it to our site, thetakeaway.org. If you can't get anything accomplished in terms of agreement at a bipartisan summit, where does it happen?
In the back room, frankly. That's where the deals get made, even if they're bipartisan on camera.
And at 15 minutes after the hour, let's check in now on the headlines.
Toyota's president, Akio Toyoda, will testify today in a congressional investigation into his company's safety issues. He's also expected to address family members of four people killed in a car crash thought to have been caused by one of those safety issues, sticky gas pedals. One family member, Joseph Ordahl, says his relatives are devastated. He says his aunt will express the family's grief at hearings this morning.
She's the face of this recall, and we just want to put a human element to the tragedy.
Adal was speaking on CBS News this morning.
A math teacher in Denver, Colorado, is credited with stopping a shooting at a middle school. The teacher, David Benke, explains what happened when he approached the shooter.
At first, when I was walking over there, it was kind of, you know, what a teacher does when they walk over and they say, hey, kid, you know, what are you doing?
Teacher tackled the shooter just after two teenage students were hit. Those students were taken to a local hospital and are expected to survive. The Census Bureau is defending its decision to spend $300 million to promote the national headcount. Department head Robert Groves told a Senate panel he knows the government is facing tough times, but the paid advertising is crucial for a successful count. Finally, the U.S. has renewed a travel alert for people heading to Mexico. The State Department says increasing violence from drug wars has prompted them to extend their warnings through August of 2010. That's a look at some of the stories that we're watching this morning. Coming up, more about Toyota's president and his appearance before Congress. He is on Capitol Hill as we speak. And you have a right to remain silent or not talk or not use oral language. However you say it, Miranda rights still okay by the Supreme Court.
Hey, you want that to go?
And now some takeouts on the stories we're following this week. Money and politics. Toyota executives, of course, back on Capitol Hill today for questions about recalls. They're there all week. But money and politics, you have to follow the money on Capitol Hill. David Leventhal is communications director for the Center for Responsive Politics. He joins us now. His organization tracks lobbying money, congressional campaigns, and where lawmakers get their money. Dave, is there a conflict of interest with Toyota from some of the lawmakers that are going to be questioning Toyota executives today?
There's certainly a very large intersection between Toyota and the federal government, and there are some lawmakers who, for example, have had stock holdings in Toyota. And one of them, Jane Harman, a representative from California, actually recused herself just last night, saying that she's not going to take part in the debate because, at least in 2008, the most recent records we have, she had hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of Toyota stock.
Now, this is why we have disclosure. So I suppose it would be one thing if these were private, but what about Toyota's lobbying? How much do they spend in support of members?
Toyota is actually the largest lobbyer among all foreign automakers, bigger than Honda, bigger than Volkswagen, and only General Motors and Ford has actually lobbied the federal government to a greater degree over the past 5 years. In all, Toyota has spent about $25 million on federal lobbying efforts. That's in addition to money that its employees associated with Toyota have given directly to candidates in the form of campaign contributions.
Clearly something to keep in mind as we're watching the hearings today, lawmakers with personal interest in Toyota and also Toyota with an interest in lawmakers. David Leventhal, Communications Director for the Center for Responsive Politics.
And now let's get another takeout from Vancouver and the Winter Olympics. Jason Stallman is covering it for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning.
Okay, so for the Olympics today, let's start with Lindsey Vonn, already a gold medalist from this Winter Olympics, but she could possibly get another one in an event today.
Lindsey's skiing an event today. You know, she's had a few days off, so she's kind of like drifted out of everyone's attention for a little bit, and she's back in the giant slalom. This is not an event that she's been particularly strong in. In fact, her teammate, Julia Mancuso, who also has a couple medals here in Vancouver, she's a little bit better at this event than Vonn is. So the Americans could come away with a medal, but don't be surprised if it's not Lindsey Vonn.
Okay, but the big news, at least for me, but I'm sure for lots and lots of people, are the hockey quarterfinals. And this is exciting on both the men's side and on the women's side. What's going on?
Well, on the men's side, you have what many people would have called a gold medal game coming into the Olympics. It was pretty well understood that Canada and Russia were fielding the best teams, and they were expected to ultimately meet for the gold medal. Canada had some troubles in their early round, so now they're having to face Russia in the quarterfinals after beating Germany today. So that's going to be a big showdown. You know, when Canada played the United States on Sunday, that was the highest-rated sporting event in television history in Canada. They said that 2 out of 3 Canadians were watching that game, and I have to believe at least that many are going to be watching Canada-Russia today.
The exciting thing for me as we start getting closer in is that, you know, there's a chance that both the women and the men's U.S. teams could be vying for a gold in hockey.
This is true. On the women's side, Canada and the United States clearly are far superior than the rest of the competition. So they're in the semifinals now playing different opponents, and they'll almost certainly meet in the finals, and one of them is going to come away with a gold medal.
It's very exciting. Jason Stallman, Olympics editor for our partner, The New York Times.
And now on to Washington and the Supreme Court. You have a right to remain silent. You have a right to an attorney. If you cannot afford one, an attorney will be appointed to you. I'm trying to quote the Miranda warning that we're all familiar with. Now, it turns out that you don't have to do it exactly. After a 7-2 decision at the Supreme Court yesterday, apparently police can now ad-lib Miranda rights.
You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to a court-appointed attorney.
You have the right to sing the blues. You have the right to cable TV. That's very important. You have the right to sublet. You have the right to paint the walls. No loud colors.
All right. They may not want to get that far afield, but here to explain the Supreme Court decision and the reasoning behind it is Adam Liptak, Supreme Court correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Now, Adam, maybe not the right to paint the walls and sing the blues, but what was the court saying yesterday?
The court says that the Miranda warnings are really principles. It's not a form that is written out in the Constitution, but a series of principles. And so long as the police give you those principles, those ideas well enough, the Supreme Court's not going to give you a form, a card that you actually have to read from. The question in the case whether police in Tampa, and they had a little form of their own, got it right when they did say two things. They said, you have the right to talk to a lawyer before answering any of our questions. That's fine. But then they didn't go on to say you have a right to have a lawyer with you when we ask you questions, or that you have a right to ask for a lawyer once we start asking questions. The Supreme Court said that was close enough because at the end of the warning there was this kind of little catch-all phrase, you have the right to use any of these rights. at any time during the interview, and they thought that criminals are smart enough to say, that must mean I have a right to a lawyer with me at the interview.
All right, well, we had the comedy Police Academy 2 at the top, which is obviously not the real world. But in the real world, Adam Liptak from the New York Times, it seems that if it's just principles officers have to impart, that they may be opening themselves up to many more legal challenges because principles are so murky. Aren't we going to see a lot more cases now about principles of Miranda?
Well, cops will probably still be safer if they either go back to the original Miranda decision and more or less use the language in there, or interestingly, the Supreme Court said that you can do it better than Miranda. It said the FBI does it the best of all, and the FBI actually has some very plain English language. It says, and this doesn't sound like the Miranda warnings, but it sounds pretty good. You have the right to talk to a lawyer for advice before we ask you any questions. You have the right to have a lawyer with you during questioning. Now, that's plain English. It doesn't sound like what you hear on the cop shows. It actually sounds a little bit better. The Supreme Court's point is it's not going to micromanage how cops do it, but it wants at least the concepts to be put across. And I guess the other thing I'd say is that people have seen this on TV enough times that it doesn't really matter how you tell it to them because they've already heard it.
They've already heard it, and they may already know their rights, or at least we hope they do, but police still have to inform you of your rights. It's your constitutional right. Adam Liptak of the New York Times Supreme Court correspondent, thanks for joining us. Coming up, our series Frustration Nation continues. Is the media to blame for congressional gridlock? We got a lot of reactions from you, and we take a closer look at what you think. That's in just a few moments. Right now, let's check in on some top stories at 31 minutes past the hour. Toyota President Akio Toyoda is now on Capitol Hill to answer questions about the company's safety lapses. He's also expected to apologize to American consumers. Elsewhere on Capitol Hill, the Senate is expected to pass a jobs bill today. Among the provisions is a tax break for companies that hire the unemployed. New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer tells MSNBC this morning he hopes this will kickstart bipartisan cooperation.
I think that Republicans are seeing in their polling that just being the party of no is not going to work. We may have a much better bipartisan year this year than last.
Five Republicans broke ranks with their party yesterday to support the jobs bill.
Federal investigators would want to use black box recordings to monitor pilot conversations. It's the first time that workplace monitoring would extend to the nation's cockpits. Until now, black box recorders have only been used in accident investigations. And Major League Baseball says it'll implement blood testing for human growth hormone in the minor leagues this year. The players' union had resisted blood testing, but it's the only way to identify HGH users who use it to build muscles and recover from injury. And a new study says doctors are cutting back on their hours. The report says doctors went from averaging 55 hours a week to 51 hours over the past decade. In the past 10 years, there's been a 25% decline in doctors' pay as well. And Twitter has found itself a new kind of follower, the Dalai Lama. The Tibetan spiritual leader joined Twitter after meeting this week with the company's founder. In 2 days, he's got 100,000 followers. If you want to tweet him, his Twitter address is @DalaiLama.
Simple enough.
Very easy to remember. The markets are open on Wall Street. It looks like the Dow is...
Where are those numbers?
We are going to have to get back to it in just a moment. It looks like
there they are.
There they are. The Dow is up 37 points. The Nasdaq's up about 13. And the S&P is up about 7 points as well. Those are some of the news stories we're following this morning.
There is much too much ideology, not enough practical progress.
People are angry, and they are frustrated that perhaps it hasn't been a fast enough change.
Even at a time of enormous national challenge, the people's business is not getting done.
I don't want you to feel discouraged.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
All this week, we've been having conversations about gridlock in Washington. It's the series we're calling Frustration Nation. Yesterday, we talked about the role of the media and whether we in the media perpetuate the political divisiveness in Washington that's stagnating our politics in Washington and across the country overall. Now, a lot of you called us at 8778-MY-TAKE and went to the website, thetakeaway.org, about the topic. And we want to get your reactions now because some of them were really telling. Here's Isaac.
This is Isaac calling from Riverdale, New York. The media is responsible for having put us through the Iraq War, the second one, and it's because of the media that we're in the economic situation that we're in right now because of their faulty coverage of Wall Street.
And Celeste, I think what Isaac is saying there is about sins of omission, that the media has not done its job, and that resulted in things like not uncovering discrepancies in things like weapons of mass destruction or malfeasance on Wall Street that have led to these problems.
Well, if you believe that one of the missions of a free press is to act as a watchdog of government and corporations, then, you know, there are many things that have been sins of omission among the media, I'm perfectly willing to admit. And it's an important point, and I believe a lot of people feel that when they say it's the media's fault. We're wondering if Americans are just as angry with the media as they are with the government. And we've come, and have we actually come to a point where people have a hard time separating the two? Yesterday we spoke with Kathleen Hall Jamieson. She's with the Annenberg Public Policy Center. And she talked about how headline-driven news is changing the way Americans consume the news.
The media are able to digest complex issues in short segments if they want to. A Republican plan, you'll be able to buy insurance across state lines. Democratic plan, you'll be able to carry your insurance until you're 26 if you're a student. The complexities of plans can be reduced to short segments.
And in there she was responding to my question about, do we have to have two people from both sides of the aisle arguing with each other? So she's saying, no, you can actually really give people the substance of the health care plan in short segments if you want to do that. But Anne from Massachusetts emails us, we depend on the media to call politicians out for misstatements and lies. The health care reform issue is an example. We hear most Americans are happy with their insurance. Then we hear 30 million people are without health insurance. So clarify what that means. We can actually clarify that for you right now, Anne from Massachusetts. Those are both correct.
They're both true things, and it's one of the complexities of the healthcare debate. Most people have coverage and like it, and
but
a lot of people don't.
Explain. What we're talking about here, Anne, is that, and you're right, it can be extremely confusing. Most people in America have healthcare. The problem is, yes, that means there are millions and millions of Americans who do not have health care. Those who do have health care, those who get health care through their employer, for the most part, are happy with what they have. But that there's also another issue out there, which is that even those people who have health care that comes from their employer or another place feel like there's room for reform in the healthcare system.
And those two groups tend to be at odds, and that can be tough for the media to cover, and maybe the media doesn't always cover those two groups of concerns very well. Now, here's another listener upset with what she's been reading and hearing.
This is Marcia from the Boston area. I hold the media very responsible, not for creating problems, but for making them go on and for making them worse. The media should be reading the health care plan and reporting what it says. The media should be investigating when the Republicans or Democrats make claims against each other that aren't truthful and reporting on the truth.
Now, I can tell you, Celeste, that my colleagues, at least on Capitol Hill, most of them do sit down, literally, and delve through 850 pages of a health care bill. They do read it, and they do try to impart it, but I think they find difficulty, frankly, when they get to their editors or producers or looking for airtime, to really explain everything they think should be explained about it.
Well, but what often ends up happening, and this is the question for me, is that when you're striving for balance, when you're going to sources and you speak with one Democratic congressman, and then you're required to speak to the Republican congressman, and they're both giving you oftentimes spin. They're trained to spin their answers. Are they not? They
sure.
go through
well,
extensive
they're media,
training.
They're media professionals themselves.
Absolutely. So the problem is that the media should be distilling that. We should be acknowledging that what we're getting from congressmen oftentimes is spin and not straight talk express,
right.
And then giving them the real answer. I think that last final piece where we say, here's what they said, but here's the actual truth of it, because oftentimes you can establish truth.
You can, and billboards are difficult. For instance, death panels, which is a famous example, there was no such thing, and yet there were provisions that were being called death panels, and when you got into the explanation of what they were really talking about, it got very murky, and it was people's opinions that came through.
It got murky, but there was no such thing as death panel. There are a few people who came out actually to defend the media. Al emails, blaming the media is merely scapegoating. Most people search out information they want to hear, not what they want to learn. The fact is, when people don't like the information, they blame the messenger. The health issue is a perfect example. Most Americans who have insurance, even when they overpay for it, don't want it to change. So they don't want to hear anything about needing to change. Most people always want issues explained to them, handed to them, already digested, and do not want to have to do any of the work at actually attempting to understand complex issues. And that's because they are lazy. They blame the media.
I think that Al's point has – I think that Al has a good point, and I said this yesterday, and I'd like to repeat it. The media has a lot of responsibility, and we in the media, it's our responsibility to check ourselves constantly. Are we informing less than entertaining? Are we fact-checking? Are we holding ourselves accountable? However, I believe the public in general, just like their politicians, gets the media they deserve. If you really think the media that you're consuming isn't performing, change the channel, turn the page, and you should do the same with politicians. If they're not performing, vote them out. And I think the same principle holds true. They're both public institutions that are very important.
Well, we always want to get your takes on what you hear on The Takeaway. You can give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post on our site, thetakeaway.org. We're going to be talking more about healthcare in the days to come, but we're also going to be talking more about it later this hour. We spoke to two congressmen earlier this hour, two congressmen who also happen to be doctors, Burgess from Texas and McDermott from Washington State. And we had some listeners listening in on that conversation. We're going to get their reactions later on. This is The Takeaway. I'm Celeste Headlee. The president of the Japanese car automaker Toyota is about to appear before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee today. As Congress looks into Toyota's recall of millions of vehicles, they're talking about sudden acceleration problems that have been blamed for about 30 U.S. deaths. The most high-profile appearance is going to come today when Akio Toyoda appears before Congress. He's the president of the largest company in Japan. But how is this being reported, the recalls, Akio Toyoda's appearance, how is it going over in Japan? To answer that, we have Michael Chuchek. He's an American blogger and a research analyst who's lived in Japan for more than 15 years, and he joins us now from Tokyo. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
So you have some papers in front of you?
Yes, I have the copy of all of these morning's papers, yeah.
And what are the headlines as Akio Toyoda heads to Congress today?
Well, it depends. If you're on the right, on the conformist conservative side of the political spectrum, there's a great deal of concern about what this all means for the U.S.-Japan security relationship. So these conservative newspapers are tending to play up a sense of concern or even fear about a deterioration of that relationship. On the other hand, the business press, quite interestingly, is rather sanguine about the whole affair. National Business Daily, the Nihon Keizai Shimbun, didn't have the story as its top story this morning. So they seem to take the attitude that recalls and defects are just part of doing business.
What has been kind of the attitude among in coverage and among the Japanese people about this whole recall in the United States? Do they feel the U.S. is blowing it out of proportion? Do they feel Toyota is unfairly targeted?
That's a really touchy thing to say because you don't want to appear to be reacting to the United States' actions. But nevertheless, there is a sense that Mr. Toyota today is walking into a lion's den at the U.S. Congress and that the best he can hope for is to not get too badly mauled. The nation's papers, all the business ones, have all said that this is not really so much a hearing as a political show. Seiji no show is the term they use, and that this is an election year in the United States, and that congressmen and women are going to try to make a good impression on television for their constituents.
I've heard it said by several people that public apologies have a very different tenor to them in Japan than they do in the United States. Many of Toyota's executives have been apologizing publicly, and Akio Toyoda is expected to do that today. How is that seen in Japan?
Well, the apology is always expected. The only difference is that in this case, there is no consumer, or there was no consumer protection agency in Japan until very recently. And as a consequence, there isn't a familiarity with dealing with consumers very, very hopped up and with the government behind them. Basically, the companies have been facing the consumers by themselves, and it's an unfair fight.
Okay, that is Michael Chuchek. He's the author of the Shishaku blog on Japanese politics and society. He joins us from Tokyo taking a look at the headlines. Kind of interesting that the business papers in Japan aren't carrying it as the top headline.
I found that shocking.
President, I mean, Toyota is the largest company in Japan. It is interesting, however, Akio Toyoda appearing before Congress today. Good morning. I'm Celeste Headlee. I'm joined here by Todd Zwillick, who's filling in for John Hockenberry, at least until tomorrow. John will return on Thursday. Coming up a little bit more in our healthcare discussion, we spoke a little earlier this hour with two congressmen, a Democrat and a Republican, both doctors, and we had some listeners listening in, and they're going to respond to what they heard in just a few moments. First, here's a check on leading stories at 47 minutes after the hour. The Senate is expected to pass a $35 billion jobs bill today. The bill would offer tax breaks to companies that hire unemployed workers. And during congressional hearings today, Toyota's president, Akio Toyoda, is expected to take full responsibility for his company's safety recalls. He's also expected to apologize to customers. And a math teacher in Denver is credited with stopping a shooting at a middle school yesterday. Deer Creek Middle School student Kevin Zwolinski told Fox News what he saw.
I didn't know what it was. I was kind of confused still, and I turned around and I saw everyone running, and then he fired a second shot. That kid, he was on the, I looked over there and he was on the ground.
Two students were shot there in the hospital, though they're expected to survive.
Moving on to Afghanistan, the U.S. military plans to spend more than $600 million to build nearly 200 police stations for the Afghan police in the coming year. And at the Olympics today, the women's bobsled finals are on the agenda, and the U.S. is running for a medal in the event. Bobsled competitor Erin Pack, she's a pilot. She's currently in second place, and she says she can't afford any mistakes.
The track is very tricky, and, you know, there's a lot of curves that you know, you make a mistake in one, it gets you three down. So you just have to hold on and ride sometimes.
And steer. The women's bobsled finals are at 6:15 p.m. Eastern time this evening. Today's events also include ladies' alpine skiing and men's ice hockey quarterfinals. Those are some of the stories we're following this morning.
Well, President Obama will hold a bipartisan summit tomorrow about health care. Both House and Senate leaders will be there. Earlier this hour, we spoke with two lawmakers from the House who also happen to be physicians, Jim McDermott, a Democrat from Washington State, and Michael Burgess, a Republican from Texas. And we wanted to bring this discussion back full circle from the lawmakers in Washington back to the public that they serve. We have three friends of the Takeaway with us. Rashonda Young joined us last summer for one of our healthcare roundtable discussions. She's the operations manager of Alpha Express. That's a small business in Waterloo, Iowa. Steve Rose, Takeaway listener from Detroit. He called in to actually comment on the healthcare debate, and we liked what he had to say. And Dr. Peter Sinton, he commented on our website about the cost of healthcare. He's a pediatrician and co-owns a practice in Ponco, Oklahoma. Good morning to all three of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Steve, I wanted to start with you, and I wanted to play for you a comment that Congressman Burgess made. He serves the 26th District of Texas. He was talking about things that he would support in terms of insurance reform, and one way he thought was by sending it back to the states. Here's what he had to say.
We could start tomorrow on just essentially insurance reform to begin to get around the problem of pre-existing conditions. You do that by risk pools, you do that by reinsurance. 34 states already have programs set up. Perhaps we're not funding them appropriately. Maybe that is one direction we could go.
A restriction, I mean, keeping people from losing insurance or not being able to get insurance because of a pre-existing condition has broad public support. Do you support a not having pre-existing condition restrictions?
I think that's a reasonable, requirement. Especially going forward, if this plan is going to go forward, I don't think it's unreasonable. I think there has to be some protections for insurance providers, and we can't just unload every cost that they might incur without giving it some thoughtful consideration and review.
Okay, you just heard Michael Burgess saying that there's certain programs already in place in many states that address some insurance problems. Do you think that the states already have some of these answers?
Well, I think if 34 states, what's that, two-thirds of the country already have something in place, they must be onto something. And the people in Washington who think that the government knows best, that the federal government knows better than the states, maybe they should take a look at what the states are doing.
Okay, Rashonda Young, let me go to you. You're the operations manager of a small business, and you've had trouble being able to afford health care for your employees.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, when you initially turn in your applications and you get your initial quote, you get rates that are reasonable, then they look at the health of each person on the plan, and they start excluding, you know, pre-existing conditions, and they, you know, double what you were initially quoted. It's not reasonable or affordable for small businesses.
Can you give me an idea of what some of these premiums cost for your business, for an employee?
For example, for an individual plan, initial quotes, you know, coming back at $241, that's not bad. But once you get health questionnaires in, an individual will cost you over $400 a month. A family, which is initially quoted at $500 and some, is almost $1,000 a month. That's a lot of money for a small business to be able to afford.
Okay, both of the congressmen addressed this issue of rate hikes and the cost of premiums. Did you hear something that you liked?
In terms of the rate hikes, definitely I believe that having a federal overseer so that the rate hikes can only go up, you know, at a reasonable percentage is definitely a must. The insurance companies have not been fair. They've had plenty of time to prove, you know, whether or not they can do this on their own, and they haven't proven that they can.
Okay, now let's go to you, Peter Sinton. You're a pediatrician in rural Oklahoma. Both of the congressmen we spoke to were also doctors. You have 80% of your patients qualify for Medicaid. What about the other 20%?
The other 20% typically have some type of private insurance, and then a small percent are self-pay or cash pay. But because of the whole rate hikes of the change in the structure of how people are insured now, the people that are supposedly insured with private insurance actually have very high deductibles and therefore are basically self-pay. And, you know, as the two congressmen know, if they were practicing physicians, that, you know, when you have self-pay patients, you rely on you know, you're kind of caught between being an altruistic physician and being a business person, which I don't like being a business person.
Okay. Did you hear something from the congressman? We heard from someone from Texas, Michael Burgess, and also the congressman from Washington State, a Democrat. Did you hear anything that gave you faith that they understand what's really at issue here and that we could get some bipartisan cooperation during the summit tomorrow?
I don't think there's going to be cooperation. I think some of the core issues of insurance reform and affecting, you know, how we get premiums down is really distasteful to the Republicans. I think they want the market system to correct us. They want competition. You know, I remember McCain talking about during the election, talking about let's get competition between states, and that's a fair thing to suggest. The other thing I think they've suggested is cooperatives, which costs an enormous amount of capital, and if you get, you know, just a group of people together, I mean, you know, they're not coming up with the kind of capital to support a non-for-profit cooperative of health coverage. So I think we're rather stuck with insurance companies because they have the basis, the capital to fund, you know, sick patients and well patients, like they said, patients with pre-existing conditions.
Okay, let me ask you, Dr. Peter Sinton, a pediatrician from Oklahoma, yes or no, have you written your congressman or senator about this?
Oh, yeah. Emailed.
Rashonda Young in Iowa, have you written your congressman or senator?
I sure have.
Okay, Steve Rose from Detroit, are you still there?
Yes.
Have you written your congressman or senator about this?
Yes, I have.
I'm Celeste. That's three of our listeners, actually. I am Celeste Headley. Three of our listeners who joined us, they were listening in on the conversation earlier that we had with two congressmen, and those are their responses. All three of them have written to either their senators or their congressmen, and it's a question of whether that's being received on Capitol Hill. I guess we might find out during the bipartisan summit tomorrow. Steve Rose, a listener from Detroit. Rashonda Young, operations manager of a family-run business in Waterloo, Iowa. And Dr. Peter Sinton, pediatrician from Ponca City, Oklahoma. Thanks to all three of you. You can catch up on all of the healthcare coverage or anything you've missed by going to our site. It's thetakeaway.org.
And while you're there, check out while you're on thetakeaway.org, click on blog, because Takeaway producer Noel King has an interesting feature. You've been hearing about how we've hit 1,000 U.S. casualties in Afghanistan. Turns out that number is a lot harder to know than you think. It's both lower and harder to pin down, so make sure you check out thetakeaway.org. For our series, The Frustration Nation, it continues today, too, on the web. Being frustrated is one thing, but how about a solution? Some of our listeners have been giving us their answers to gridlock, some in just six words. Mike in Colorado posted to the site, term limits, no filibuster, limits on lobbyists, limit campaign contributions, and more open government. That's not six words, but it's close. Well, it's pretty close. 8778-MY-TAKE, thetakeaway.org.
What does close mean to you, Todd?
Well,
that's not very close. I'm Celeste
20.
Headley.
I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. It's The Takeaway.
Go, go, Todd Zwillick!
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.